Welcome to episode 199 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace, I'm joined by Nick and Marty, and if you can't tell, I'm damn excited that we're approaching that big 200 mark. The bat will be raised next week. How are you, Marty? You excited?
Yeah, settle down, mate, settle down. You've been up and about since 120. We got to get there. We're going to have a live audience. I believe all 8 tickets are nearly sold out, which is absolutely tremendous, but... I think they're going at $5,000 a pop or something like that. But,
love tickets for a private show.
I'm pretty sure I heard today there's been some more released. So
has there?
Anyone? Yeah. So I think maybe we give your mobile number out by the end of this episode and start a bidding war. What do you think?
I like it. It's sort of, they're doing that overseas now and in Australia. It's sort of, as we sell out, we release more. I like this. I feel like Taylor Swift at the moment, just much more prettier. So very excited, but more excited about what you got for us, Nick. So hit us up. What's going on?
Oh, I just want to talk about borrowing more money and how do we make that happen, I guess. Just money makes money, Marty. Isn't that what they say?
Yes, money makes money unless you haven't got any. Then, but it's tough.
Yeah, look, obviously we want people borrowing for the right reasons, and you know, that's why you would come to Innovate or Future to get good advice around why you should be borrowing. But there was something that came out today from APRA, and APRA is the, I guess, the regulator of the banks that keeps the banks in check in relation to lending. And for anyone that doesn't know, I think most people would, but at the moment if you go, or in previous years as well, if you went to borrow for a home loan or an investment loan and your interest rate was 6%, the bank will put a 3% buffer on that rate when they assess you. So you've got to demonstrate to the bank that you can lend $1 million and hypothetically make the repayments at whatever 9% would be. And that's allowing for things to go wrong. So, you know, hypothetically there's interest rate increases. Can you show serviceability at a higher level than what you're actually paying? There's been a lot of noise to reduce that 3% buffer. Any reasons why you think they would be reducing that buffer or would want that buffer reduced, particularly if you're a bank?
Well, I think Marty's got an unfair advantage at answering this question, but from my point of view, I think with interest rates getting so high, tack on another 3% on top of that, and all of a sudden I feel like we're assessing people's serviceability at just such a stupidly high interest rate. It's like almost like a... you know, one of those low-rate MasterCards is the same rate they're bloody assessing you for a home loan, which seems a bit, you know, a bit too far from what it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, banks make money through lending money. They want to make some more. So that's probably the reasoning. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you would assume that it's, I think the main thing it's allowing for is a movement in interest rates to go up. And obviously we've been on a pretty significant upward trend and most people would suggest we're nearly at the end of that. There's obviously some debate about what the next move will be from the RBA, whether it's up or down or we just stay where we are. But either way, you're probably thinking, well, the rates aren't going to go up 3% anytime soon. We're kind of at the top of the cycle. So there has been some push to have that 3% buffer dropped at least. APRA has recently come out and said we are not dropping that. We're keeping the serviceability rate where it is. So I thought it'd be a good time to talk about a couple of things that people can do to make sure that they are absolutely maximizing their serviceability when they're looking to buy a property, whether it's for a home or investment. And this is not necessarily about, you know, how do I borrow the most money, but the reality is where the housing market is now and your borrowing and where your borrowing capacity is, they might not meet. You might need a little bit extra to be able to, you know, put your hand up at auction on the weekend to put your hand up with confidence and get the house that you want. So there's a couple of things that you can do to make sure that you are getting the absolute maximum borrowing power. First thing is if you, and Jace, this is something for you, if you've had a situation in the last 6 to 9 months where you haven't been able to borrow as much as you wanted, one of the key things that's happened since July 1, 2024 is there's been some tax cuts introduced. So people are paying less tax, which means they've got less money in their pockets, which means they've got more money left over to service debt. Jace, the tax cuts, you give us a high-level snapshot of those? You probably know off the top of your head, I would have thought.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, yeah, effectively it was the ATO went and were applying these stage three tax cuts. They've been happening over a number of years, but the final stage was around leveling out all the tax brackets. So effectively trying to get more people paying less tax per tax bracket. So overall for the 24-25 year, the average taxpayer has close to an extra $40 a week in their pocket. So, you know, over a year, it's $2,000 to $4,000 on average in people's pockets, whereas the year before they would have paid that in extra tax to the tax man. So, you know, there was the 37% bracket, which is probably the biggest one that was abolished, and that was brought down to a 30-cent tax bracket up to $190,000. So, yeah, pretty impressive.
With the APRA saying they're not coming down from that 3% rate, do you think they're just being disciplined about it? I know the mortgage arrears have sort of jumped from, well, I think it was around about 0.5 to 1%. What do you think the motivation in not dropping it? Are they seeing something that we're potentially not seeing, or is it the tax cuts?
No, I just think it's genuine uncertainty about the economy and where we actually stand at the moment. And you know, if you think about interest rates, we're probably at the top of the interest rate cycle. Again, there's some argument we might get another increase, but inflation is still there and inflation is still strong. So, you know, if you decrease the serviceability buffer and you let people get in and show serviceability at maybe 8% instead of 9%, well, we might be at the top of the interest rate cycle, but what if the price of bread and milk continues to skyrocket? What pressure does that then put on people's ability to make a mortgage repayment?
And just to clarify, sorry, I had to cut in. I said wrongly. It's an average rate of 30 cents to up to 190K. Sorry, I just had to cut in. I was running my numbers going, hang on, I made that sound wrong.
The one
listener's just gone, hang on a minute, 30 cents to the dollar to 190. My accountant didn't say that. So, yeah, it's after 135,000. That's where the 30-cent bracket cuts off. And up to 190, that's where you tax 37 cents to the dollar. But the point is they tried to average it out that between zero and 190,000, if you're up to 190,000, you're paying less than 30 cents to the dollar in tax. So sorry to cut back in there, but just had to make sure that one listener that ran the numbers wasn't thinking they were paying more in tax than what I was saying they should be.
Relevant information. Thank you. So yeah, circling back to your question, Marty, yeah, I just think it's uncertainty as to where the economy is at, cost of living, all these pressures that we don't know when they're going to subside. I think it's just taking the cautious road, which is very understandable.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of people that were impressed with the idea of removing or at least loosening the 3% buffer. So, you know, it makes me wonder why are they poo-pooing behind the scenes a little bit to not at least, you know, meet halfway or make it a 2% or a 1.5% buffer or a floating buffer of some sort where they can, have a bit more flexibility.
I think they're really worried about the arrears rate and arrears being people that are not up to date with their mortgage repayments. And at the moment, it's still fairly low. But the reality is the average couple or single person has run out of money. So we don't have the savings buffers that we have had in the past, particularly prior or post-COVID. So I think people have had, and we've spoken about this, but they've had money to fall back on. If you look at the savings level, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure the information I looked at recently said that our average savings per household is down to 0.9% of our income, whereas it was around COVID, it was sitting at somewhere between 7 and 8%, something like that. So our ability to save is diminished, if not completely gone, which means we don't have any wriggle room. Which means any variation in interest rates or any variation in the price of bread and milk is going to have an impact. So I think the worry is that when you're looking at the arrears rates, I don't think we've seen the worst of it yet because people had that cash buffer. So I think it's just, you know, being cautious, Chase, which I actually agree with, particularly given, you know, some of the levels of repayments that people have at the moment. I've just done some numbers just to put this into context as to what does it mean as far as the tax cuts and how much extra you could borrow. And as I said, this isn't about getting people to borrow as much as they can, but this is about being actually in the market and being able to compete on a property that you would like. So I've got two examples here. First example is someone single on 120K per annum, which is pretty standard. And the second example is a couple earning a combined income of 280K, which is also pretty standard. So let's stick to the single person first. So on 120K income, you are netting around 7,500 per month in income after the tax cuts. So the tax cuts have allowed you, so if you're looking at June 2024, fast forward to July 2024 and onwards, that individual can now borrow $642,000 to put them in a position to buy a house, which is a $27,000 increase on what they could prior to the tax cuts. So there's an uplift there of 27K. It's not huge, but it's about, you know, it's about 4%, give or take, and it could be the difference between them getting in into the property. That would attract a loan repayment of $4,000 per month. So this is probably the other topic that we should be talking about. We'll maybe park this conversation until I've finished with the numbers. But someone on 120K per annum, netting 7,500 per month in income, if they went and borrowed their maximum, which was 642,000, $4,000 per month in a loan repayment. So that's over 50% of their salary or their net income. If you look at the second example, so the couple on a combined income of 280,000 gross, they're netting around 17,000 per month in income. The tax cuts has increased their borrowing capacity by 75,000. So they can now borrow 1.334 million on average, which is a 75K increase compared to the prior to the tax cuts, which is a significant difference.
That's big. That's a big difference.
Yep. Their repayment on that amount would be 8K per month. So there you're sitting at around, you know, just over 50% of net income per month again. So for the average single person, they can now borrow an extra 27K. For the average couple, they can now borrow an average of an extra 75K. We're pushing up to over 50% of the household net income going towards a home loan repayment. Let's say throw in there you've got a car loan, you know, which might be another $1,000 a month. You can see why people are not saving much, you know, the cost of living, insurances, all these things. It really makes you wonder how people are surviving when they're spending that level of money on one asset or, you know, the home loan.
I got very scared there for a minute, Nick, as you talked about those numbers when you're talking 120 and 280. And we see comments sometimes on the YouTube channel go, you're kidding yourselves, people earning 80 grand on average, right? A lot of people out there earning 60s trying to run a family. And I just go, you know, when you've got more surplus income, you might be able to get away with 50% of your income going towards a mortgage, but still pretty tough, let alone if someone's coming in at 70s and you go 60s, it's virtually criminal how people just can't get into the market because they can't live because all the, you know, discretionary spending that they have to. Well, it's not discretionary. You've got food and bills and everything else that people have to pay. It's pretty tough when you talk about those bigger numbers and you're going, it's tough for them. Okay, far out.
And just to mention too, by no means are we suggesting this is the average person. This is what you're seeing from a home loan point of view. So these are people that are in the position to buy houses, not necessarily the average punter. But yeah, it is scary. You know, it's not many people can afford to buy a car with cash these days. If you do, you're buying an older car, probably needs a lot of work. So people are borrowing for cars. School fees, all these things. It's just, it really is a concern, given that it's very difficult to, you know, go to a supermarket and walk away spending less than 50 or 100 bucks these days for a meal or two.
Well, you're down to, like, let's say someone is on 120 grand and they can borrow, what would you say,
$642.
I mean, you're really looking at a townhouse in Melbourne, or you've got to go regionally or somewhere. Mm. Where you can get better bang for your buck. And I think people, you know, they usually live around their work. But if they're making decisions to buy assets, maybe you do have to really think about what's the best asset you can get so you're still in the market building some form of wealth, that you're getting good bang for your buck. And that might not necessarily where you initially think it is. So you do have to think a lot differently out there. Yeah. And I know there's places where you can buy for, you know, it's limited, but 500 grand to at least get in, you know.
Well, you've got to look at, I think you've got to look at your personal circumstances too. And
definitely.
This really hit home with me. Only yesterday I had a conversation with a close friend of mine. Is very comfortable, has a good business. That business can operate from anywhere. He was talking about them considering a move to Perth, WA.
Yep.
Now, of course, WA's had a bit of a spike in property values, but you can still get in there reasonably. Cheap's not the word, but you can still find value there compared to the better suburbs in Melbourne or the ones closer to the city. So he's, you know, Melbourne born and bred, got a good business, so can go where he needs to. And he just said, look, Perth makes sense for us. We've got some ties there. We can go there with the money we've got and actually have a really good lifestyle compared to what we're dealing with here in Melbourne. And that was, you know, this is someone I would never have picked to be leaving Melbourne. But, you know, you've also got to sit back and look at your own personal circumstances. And obviously you might need to stay in a particular area because there's family ties, but can you work somewhere else? Where can you provide the best lifestyle for your family, for your kids, this kind of stuff? So there's a deeper conversation here, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
We're definitely hearing that from our clients too, when, you know, it's kind of tax return time, July, August, September, and in accounting firm land, and you reconnect with your clients that you haven't spoken to necessarily for a year who are, you know, searching for their refund back. And we've had several conversations about people saying, you know, what do you need to know if I move house? And I was like, oh, you know, you're leaving Melbourne. Yeah, look, might head up north or might head west. When we're saying heading north, it's not to Sydney. They're going for way further up north, better weather, and escape the cost of living that we're copping in Melbourne and Sydney. So, yeah, I'm hearing it too, Nick, for sure.
But it's making people ask better questions. And I think this is really important because it's about living a life you want to live, not just working an obligation. Mm. And I think, and I've talked about it before, being in, you know, Nutter Wadding, you could buy for 169 grand in 2000, right? And you could be on 80 grand, have your loved one staying at home, looking after your kids, and you live well. And you go, it's just, I shake my head and going, how are the younger people even doing it? And what does the future look like? Because I go, that still was a very, very comfortable lifestyle. And now I go, like when I look at that in ratios, I would have to earn nearly $1 million to have that equivalent benefit of life in borrowing now. And I go, that's just ridiculous. In my mind, I go, that's crazy for me to duplicate that circumstance now. And I go, when you think about it in that light and living that experience, you just go, that's just, I just don't know how those younger people doing it.
Yeah, if only our salaries went up at the same rate that the you know, mortgage or the cost of the houses went up in Australia. That would be absolutely mind-boggling. Nick, I did have an extra question for you that you know, it's a bit of crystal balling. I think we've all heard economists come out and say when they think interest rates will come down. So I'm going to throw it out there and ask you for a prediction. We don't do it too often because, you know, it can come back and bite us in the bum, but this is a high level. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? Or what are your predictions around when we might see some interest rate relief here in Australia?
Well, I don't think you'll definitely see them until next year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of talk around the fact that maybe we haven't peaked yet. I think the data would suggest that we're seeing at the moment that, and here you go, I'm giving you an answer without giving you a prediction. But I think that the data would suggest that the RBA should increase the rates. But when you're on the ground and you're talking to people, you would think the opposite, that the rates cannot go up. So, you know, and you've got differing opinions from different economists. The one thing I will say is if we do get a rate rise, I think we're still pretty much at the peak of the cycle, so we might get one. However, I think you need to factor in the current rates we're paying for quite some time yet into, you know, maybe the second quarter of next year. But there's just so many things up in the air, and you know, they're not budging inflation like they thought they would at this stage anyway.
Yeah, we did see the major banks, one of the major banks that I'm sure they'll follow, bring down the 3-year fixed rates to under 6. So that's a significant move, suggesting the longer term outlook means rates will come down. Just what I've been reading in the market, I think the earliest I've seen a rate cut is May 2025, with another major bank saying August of 2025. But the inflation data suggests we might get one more rate hike. I hope that doesn't happen. US had some core inflation come out that was a little bit higher last week than they expected, because they were thinking of cutting rates in September.
Yep.
But that was slightly higher, so I hope they cut and we follow suit. So
bit of doom and gloom here, so I just want to finish on a bullish note. Just something I wanted to throw in there. So we're obviously talking about, we started this conversation with the assessment rate being 3%, and it obviously makes it difficult for people to borrow. And I talked about APRA, and APRA being the ones that regulate the banks. Non-bank lenders, and there's many of them out there, there's far more non-bank lenders than bank lenders, are not regulated by ASIC. So they actually have the ability to go outside the 3%. They still need to be responsible. Not regulated by APRA. They still need to be responsible as far as lending goes, but they can be opportunistic, I think is a good word to use. So if you are in the market to buy a property and you're dealing with a major bank or a bank, and serviceability is the problem, which for most people that can't get finance at the moment, that is the problem. Make sure you're looking outside the major banks. What we're seeing now is the smaller banks bringing in some niches that allow them to be able to borrow or lend people more money. So those niches could be things based around how they are assessing people's ongoing expenses, how they are assessing income. You know, do they take 100% of your bonus? If it's regular, do they take 50%? So smaller lenders, they see the problem out there at the moment, which is serviceability is a challenge, and they want to write business, so they're looking at ways to have certain policies that will allow them to lend more. So if you're dealing with a big bank and they've said no on serviceability, broaden your scope and have a look at some smaller banks, whether you do that yourself or through a broker. The discrepancy between max borrowing from one lender to another is quite significant at the moment, depending on the circumstance.
No, yeah. Love it, Nick. That's why you guys are the experts, and that's why we love the extra value you bring to the podcast, Nick. Marty and I always get an extra pep in our step when you're bring us these exciting extra bits for our listeners to think about. So if you've listened to the app and you have been trying to get in the market and thought there was no way, stage 3 tax cuts might be the extra little bonus that you haven't thought about yet. So reach out to the Innovate team, book yourself a consult, start to look at getting in the market if you haven't already. And if you are in the market, it might be the time to strike while other people aren't thinking about it. So it's been another episode of The Numbers Game. Like, follow, subscribe, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, we're everywhere that you can find us. Until next time, though,
don't be scared to buy the fear. As long as it makes sense, game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.